Welcome to Manny's, a people-powered, community-minded space at the corner of 16th and Valencia in the Mission. On a typical Friday night, Manny's is buzzing with music, political discussions, and a roster of speakers and performers. But these days, like most businesses, Manny's is closed to the public. Instead, they are presenting a series of virtual conversations with local leaders and thinkers who are trying to make sense of this moment and how we will recover. To keep you civically engaged while we are sheltered in place, KALW is airing a new Welcome to Manny's every Friday evening. Tonight, founder Manny Akutiel talks with Eileen Rinaldi of Ritual Coffee about the role of coffee in our quarantined lives, how cafes may change post-corona, and tips for brewing the perfect cup. And now, welcome to Manny's.
Thank you for tuning in. My name is Manny Akutiel, and I'm the owner of Manny's. And today we're going to talk to Eileen Rinaldi, my friend, and actually the first vendor that I chose for Manny's was Ritual Coffee.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about Eileen's company, coffee in San Francisco, and the role of coffee in the recovery in the future. Okay, so first of all, when was Ritual founded and what gave you the idea to do it?
Well, next month is our 15-year anniversary. We opened in May of 2005. My very first job in coffee was when I was 21. I had just graduated from college with a degree in religious studies. Yeah.
And why? I was also, like, were you very religious?
No, I really enjoyed understanding, I mean, studying the philosophy and the history of religion. I mean, it was interesting. At my school, about half of the religious studies majors were religious and half were not.
Got it.
And that made for really great discussions.
Cool.
I was in a place of trying to decide if I wanted to go to graduate school for religious studies or if I wanted to go to medical school. And I took a job working in a coffee shop that I thought would be a mindless job and I would be able to think about what I really wanted for the future. But as soon as I started working in that coffee shop, I knew that I didn't want to do anything else. I didn't want to go to graduate school and that I had found what I wanted to do.
Wow.
And from there, I moved to Seattle, which was, you know, at that time, Seattle and Portland were so far ahead of the rest of the country in terms of the quality of coffee. And so that was where I kind of got into the craft of coffee. And so at first I just wanted to open a cafe. But when I first moved to San Francisco, which was 17 years ago this year, there wasn't anybody roasting coffee in the style that I had gotten used to in Seattle. And so I just thought, oh, well, I'll have to open a roasting company. And I had no idea what a giant decision that was. And I had no idea how much I didn't know about roasting and sourcing coffee and all of that. But I'm so glad that I made the decision to start roasting coffee because it opened up two other levels of the business for me. Like we get to, you know, source coffee. So part of it is getting to know coffee producers from all over the world. And then the other part is it allows us to wholesale coffee to people like you. And I really love small business. So I love getting to have a hand in other people's small businesses as well as my own.
How did you find that location on Valencia?
Oh, that's a fun story. I knew that I wanted to be on Valencia. When I was living in Seattle, Dave Eggers' book, A Heartbreaking Work of Staggering Genius, had just come out, and he came to Seattle on a book tour, and he talked about the Pirate Store, and I was like, that is where I'm going to open.
What?
I don't care where it is. Because at that point, my dream for my cafe was that it was going to be the center of the literary movement of the early 21st century.
Amazing.
And so when I knew what Dave Eggers was starting, I was like, oh, well, that's clearly the literary movement of the early 21st century. And so I need to be near those people and I'll be their cafe.
Yeah.
And so it's funny because I visited here for Halloween. Before moving here, back when we had like a big Halloween celebration in the Castro.
Right.
And I said, take me to Valencia Street. It's where I'm opening my cafe. And my friend was like, I think you want to be like in a rich neighborhood, like somewhere people have a lot of extra money to spend on coffee. And I was like, no, Valencia Street's where I belong. Mm-hmm. And so I looked for a location for so, I mean, I was working, managing a coffee shop in the financial district, and I would spend my weekends walking up.
Is it still around?
No, it got bought out by Starbucks. It was called Torre Fazioni Italia. It was a great small chain, also from Seattle. They had 22 cafes, mostly on the West Coast, but they got eaten by Starbucks. So I would spend my weekends like walking up Valencia and down and up 16th and down 16th and up 17th. And I had just, I identified 1026 Valencia as the perfect spot because I knew I wanted to roast coffee. So I was looking for a one-story building. I liked the light on our side of the street better. And so basically it was
Do you get better light on that side of the street?
Yeah, I knew that. I thought that was important. So I had identified 1026 Valencia as the ideal spot, and it was a high-end furniture store called Home Remedies. And I went in and I talked to the woman and I was like, if you're ever thinking about leaving, I would take your space over. And she was like, there's the door. Get up. And I left her my card and I was like, look, I grew up in a small business. Things change. If things ever change for you, I would want you to call me.
No way.
And she was like, goodbye. And a week later she called me and she was like, well, what do you mean? And I was like, look, I really like this space and I would pay you to leave.
Wow.
And so that's how I got the space.
I actually did that too. And I always felt kind of awkward about it, but I would like, cause I knew that I wanted to be around the 16th Street station. And I definitely like wandered around like auto body shops and storage space, like warehouses around there. And I was like, you know, is anyone planning on leaving? Because I'm planning on opening up a small business. And most people are like, who do you think you are? Also, you're 2 years old. Get away from me. And I'd be like, yeah. I know I'm 2 years old, but I really want to open up this spot. So I feel you. So your dream of ritual was that it would become a literary, kind of be part of a literary revolution or zeitgeist. How has ritual's 15 years of growth and development matched to what you thought it would be?
Oh, it's just, I mean, it's far exceeded anything I could ever have imagined. I mean, I wrote my 5-year plan that I would have a roastery cafe and, you know, as many as 4 other cafes. And so I imagined this little, you know, local mini chain that was doing retail and wholesale. And, you know, and in 2010 on our 5-year anniversary, we had achieved all of that. But the thing that has just blown me away is how coffee has fit into so many other places. And I think that's one of the things that I love about coffee is that it's a catalyst for other things to happen. And so, you know, we get phone calls all the time or emails now, you know, of just people being like, hey, I'm working on this like low budget indie movie and we really need coffee. If you give us coffee, we'll put some of it in the back of the movie. And I'm always like, yes, of course I will give you coffee. And so I think that's the thing that has just far exceeded what I could imagine. I mean, we're in, you know, there's like novels that take place in coffee shops. And I mean, there's ritual takes place, you know, is the coffee shop in people's novels. And, you know, somebody just messaged me the other day about a movie that I don't even know about where our coffee is in the movie. And, you know, just things like that, where it's this, you know, there's other things that are happening in the arts world and coffee gets to be a part of it. And I love when that happens.
What do you think is the legacy of coffee? Meaning like, I'm just going to let that question sit where it is. What's the legacy of coffee?
I mean, well, I can say what I would like for it to be, but I think we're not there yet.
Okay.
Like
I'll accept that adjustment to the question.
So when you say that, what I think about is I think about my coffee producers. And I think about so we source coffee directly from people that we have relationships with. And those are primarily smallholder farmers in Central America, South America, and Africa. And, you know, when other industries, like specifically the chocolate industry, is one that's kind of younger than coffee, they look to us for what we've done in sort of separating quality from commodity. And I think we have a long way to go. So I guess what I'd like to see is I'd like it that coffee's legacy be separating. I would like for us to separate from the commodity world. Does that make sense? And like, be.
I'm not sure I totally understand what that means.
So
you're a smart businesswoman.
Let me take a step back. So coffee is traded as a commodity, right? So basically, bankers in New York decide how much coffee farmers in Guatemala get paid.
Okay.
What?
That sounds weird.
Yeah, and it's based on the weather in Brazil.
Wait, what?
And coffee consumption in China.
What?
Right? It's not based on anything real. Okay. Although bankers, I'm sure, are like, what? Those are totally real factors. But it's not based on how the coffee tastes. And so something that we have done since as long as we've been buying coffee for 13 plus years, green coffee, I mean, we have tried to separate. We've tried to divorce our model from the commodity model. So we taste coffee and we say, this is exceptional. We're willing to pay 3 times what the commodity price would be paid
based
on a commodity market.
Okay.
And that's important because the commodity price is typically below the cost of production. So coffee farmers have to pay to produce coffee. That's not sustainable, right? So for me, what's been important and what Ritual's legacy is that we pay coffee farmers a living wage. And so that they see a future and hopefully their kids and grandkids see a future in coffee farming. Because I can't do what I do, you can't do what you do if we can't get green coffee. So we want the younger generations to be enthusiastic about producing coffee. And it's great if they're exceptionally enthusiastic and want to make it taste better. And those are typically the farmers that we work with. So what I'd like to see, you know, but, and then on the other hand, for commodity grade coffee, you know, slavery is still an issue. Like this week, if it hadn't been canceled due to our current global pandemic, I would be at a coffee conference in Portland and we would be talking about slavery in the year 2020 in the coffee industry. And
is it possible that some of us are drinking coffee that are made by slaves?
If you are drinking commodity coffee, it's likely that you are drinking coffee.
But like local coffee shops in San Francisco?
No, I mean, that's primarily more, you know, the like much bigger producers or like, cheap instant coffee or coffee in a can kind of thing.
Wow.
But when you're paying like a premium price, when you're paying $3, $4, or $5 for a cup of coffee, part of what you're paying for is knowing that the people who picked the coffee were paid a fair wage and they are free to choose to do that job.
Okay. Another kind of obtuse question. What do you think the role of coffee consumption is right now? Not economic, but like, what do you think coffee is? What role do you think coffee is serving right now to the San Francisco and American public,
philosophically and emotionally? I think at the end of a day, when people are like a little bit beat down, thanks to the current situation, what coffee does is people go to bed and they're thinking, I get to wake up and have coffee tomorrow. that's it. That's all you need. And it's so funny because like sometimes, I've been working in coffee for 20 years now. And sometimes I don't want to get out of bed. And then I think, oh, but I get to have coffee. And it's like, that's a completely new thought.
Yes.
And I think that something I've been seeing kind of in our cultural zeitgeist right now is people saying like, that is like, I go to bed so I can wake up and have coffee.
Wow. I've been doing this thing where this is going to sound really pretentious. Okay. So just like prepare yourself. But every morning since this started, I've been waking up before the sunrise and I've been reading Team of Rivals and I've had a cup of coffee. And it's this little ritual that obviously I'm not the only one to have a cup of coffee early in the morning. But that combination of like a good book, the beautiful kind of quietness of the outdoors, and a really good cup of coffee is like the perfect marriage and the perfect way to start a day. And I can't imagine the experience without one of those factors, coffee being probably the most important.
That's wonderful. Yeah, I mean, my life goal is to just get to a place where I drink coffee somewhere beautiful every morning.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. My backyard, like right now, yeah. It's my backyard. What's better than that?
I want to ask you about the role of coffee in the recovery and coffee culture. And how do you think the coffee industry and coffee life in San Francisco is going to be affected by this shutdown? Do you think we're going to lose a lot of coffee shops? Do you feel like coffee shops are going to need to bond together to make it through this? What are you thinking? What are you hearing as one of the leaders in the coffee world in the Bay?
This part is really grim. I mean, what I'm hearing in the coffee industry is there were a lot of people who were very quick to pivot, whether that was pivoting to ordering ahead or, you know, like at Valencia, we pivoted to a general store model where we're selling loaves of bread and bottles of soap and nice hand sanitizer and things that are essentials right now. I think we just added toilet paper too.
Like for those who need some TP?
Well, you know, it's still hard to get, you know?
Really? I don't use it, so.
You can tell me about how you do that later. But, you know, so the people who are doing well are the people who pivoted quickly. And then I think there's another group of people who are a little bit paralyzed by this, who are like, don't know how to respond. And so to those people, what I would say is like, really think through how you can make your business safe for your staff and for your customers. And it's really hard to think through what that looks like, you know, because mm-hmm. It's not just going to shelter in place be lifted and everything goes back to normal. Like we're going to have to incorporate social distancing into our business models on both sides of the counter.
Right.
And so I know that there are a lot of places that aren't going to make it through this. I mean, we're a pretty big company, obviously, in comparison to a lot of mom and pop coffee shops. And we were still, you know, the equivalent of living paycheck to paycheck as a company, you know? So I know if we are, that a lot of smaller companies also are. And
yeah.
Without, you know, I mean, don't get me started on the failures of the CARES Act for small businesses, because we could do a whole section on that.
Yeah. And you and I have talked about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm worried about my wholesale accounts. I'm worried about places, you know, I think the San Francisco economy, I know the San Francisco economy is more resilient than a lot of other places. I think even, you know, we have a cafe up in Napa, and in the 2008 recession lasted a lot longer up there than it did in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And so then I worry about the places in, you know, Louisville and Oklahoma City and, yeah. you know, Ann Arbor and all these much smaller cities that don't have a, you know, as resilient an economy. But I think we're going to see a lot of change. And it's funny because there's a really great movie called A Film About Coffee. I recommend you watch it.
Ooh,
it's a beautiful movie. It was made by a company in San Francisco. And you know, that movie came out, I think, 4 years ago or something. And even then, like, people would ask me, like, what's the future of coffee? And I talked about how, like, there's going to be a split. Like, cheap coffee is going to stay the same price and the quality is going to drop. And expensive coffee is going to continue to get better, but also we're going to see a differentiation in terms of the experience right? Mm-hmm. Because right now most coffee shop models are the same, and it's not really that different from fast food. You shuffle up to the counter, you place an order, you shuffle, you know, and pay, and then you shuffle somewhere else, pick up your order, and go to your seat.
What's all this shuffling happening? Is it just like a ritual thing?
I mean, I'm just making it sound as basic as possible. But and I think that when we think about what a cafe looks like with social distancing, we are going to have to differentiate our experience. So I think, you know, the to-go model, we may have to keep people standing outside and waiting for their coffee. And then if you're going to the cafe and you're one of the people who's seated at a table that's 6 feet from the next, maybe we have table service. I mean, maybe we incorporate
They do that in Vienna, don't they?
Right. I mean, and that's what I was going to say is I think about the Italian model where in Italy, you walk up to a counter and you order espresso and it's €1. But if you sit at a table, it's €2 or whatever. Yeah. So maybe we're going to see that kind of a model emerge.
You posted recently a picture of you serving your first customer at the Ritual shop on Valencia. And I wanted you to tell me what it felt like the first moment you opened the doors to your first coffee shop.
Oh, that's a fun memory. I mean, so the first customer, to be fair, was my roommate. So, you know, that wasn't a big shock that somebody that I knew and loved who had been with me through the whole process of building it was there at 7 a.m. on our first day.
Yeah.
But the thing that blew me away was the next customer, because I didn't know him. And I looked at my coworker who had built the shop out with me, and I was like, Allie, do you know this guy? And she was like, no. And we both kind of stared at him. And obviously we took his order and made his coffee and said, thank you. But it was just so mind-blowing that somebody just walked in off the street and ordered coffee and gave us money for it and then sat down and hung out. And then he blogged about it. Because that was the main form of...
Yep. On his blogger site.
Yeah. I don't even think we called it social media yet. I don't know what we called it. We called it blogging.
Yeah, blogging. I had a blog.
Yeah. So he blogged Manny's about Musings. It. And then more people came in, and it was just really incredible to see all these people respond to the thing that I had built. And, you know, beyond my friends and family, who, of course, loved me and supported me through the process.
As an individual, what is the most environmentally sustainable way for me to consume coffee?
Ooh. Well, the biggest carbon footprint, you know, part of the carbon footprint is the transportation of the green coffee. Mm-hmm. So I recommend, you know, moving to Central America and living on a coffee farm.
Love it. Great. So Michael Pollan writes that coffee and caffeine is a drug, and he spent several months abstaining. He said he felt very different. What's your view?
I love the way coffee makes me feel. I mean, I could abstain, but it feels so good. Why would I? Although sometimes, you know, you abstain for a while and then you have it again and then it feels even better.
I'm curious as to how you think producers and sourcing will be affected or have been affected at this time. Has your sourcing changed significantly?
I am very concerned about how this is going to affect my producers. And I'm fortunate that the SCA, the Specialty Coffee Association, is doing a lot of work to be providing education, because I think one of the biggest problems right now is that the information that we have on COVID-19 is very localized depending on your geography. Mm-hmm. And so there was a lot of misinformation. And I think the SCA is trying to get some good information to coffee producing countries so that people know what to do, how to protect themselves. But I'm concerned about that. And so far the only supply chain issues we've had is just a slowdown, because everybody's working from home. So the logistics, like a lot of, a lot of systems are like on physical computers and importers and at the places that hold our coffee. But that's not a big deal. The other supply chain issue you'll notice is that very soon our signature red cups will be gone and we'll have some white cups because our cup manufacturing happens in China and all the paper cup manufacturers pivoted to make masks.
Oh, wow.
And so we won't have red cups for a little while.
I don't know what that's going to be like. All right, some questions about your preferences. What's your favorite brew method and why?
Ooh. Well, I have a favorite brew method for every scenario, right? So if I'm in a fully built out coffee shop, I mean, nothing beats espresso. But if I'm at home in my kitchen, I like a Kalita, which is a metal cone. And I like it because it produces a really round, it gets a lot of the sweetness and the like satisfying body out of a good cup of coffee. But if I'm camping, I really like AeroPress because if water is limited, it's just so easy to clean up an AeroPress. It's also really good to make an iced coffee when it's hot. And so like when you're camping, you want to have less gear and then it can make a hot coffee or a cold coffee.
Amazing. You got the
but
good,
if I'm on an airplane, good. Which obviously
oh my God.
No one's going anywhere, then I go with my the Ritual instant coffee.
Got it. Okay. A love for all seasons.
Yeah.
My last question for you is, you started Ritual in 2005 and braved the 2009 recession. What's your approach to navigating through the next few years, given a probable recession?
Right. So I've been very cavalier about recessions because the 2008 recession really hardly affected us. But we were a really different business in 2008. In 2008, I had Ritual Valencia, I had Flora Grub, and I had my Napa cafe opened in 2008. We were still doing all of the roasting at Valencia Street. So it was a super lean operation where almost everything was under one roof. And at that time, you know, our cafe sales went up because everybody was working from home, or I mean, they were unemployed. So they were coming and hanging out in the cafe and there was just like a really good community scene.
It wasn't like everyone was like glued to their laptops and cell phones at that point.
No, we were definitely already glued to laptops.
Oh, really?
And our BlackBerry Pearl.
Oh my God, I didn't have a laptop till like 2010.
Oh, well, there's a great 2008 article. We were the front page of the San Francisco Chronicle one Sunday about how we were like this startup, the Web 2.0 epicenter. But, you know, so I've always been really cavalier about recessions, but I didn't have global pandemic in my plan book.
Right.
And so it's going to, you know, it's really hard to imagine how not being able to, like, so much of what my business is bringing people together. And we can't do that. So I'm going to have to figure out how to have a business without bringing people together.
I know exactly the feeling, Eileen. Thank you very much for listening in. Thank you, Eileen, for being so freaking awesome. And have a good rest of your evening, everyone.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this installment of Welcome to Manny's. To hear previous episodes, including conversations with Mayor London Breed and author Michael Pollan, head to kalw.org. And while you're there, consider making a donation to KALW and support the programming you love and need. To check out the full roster of upcoming talks, head to welcometomannies.com. The show was produced by David Boyer, that's me, and engineered by David Kwan. Special thanks to Manny Akutiel and David Perry from Manny's and our general manager, Tina Pam-Antoine, for making this happen. We'll meet you next Friday at 5 p.m. right here on KALW.